Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond. I'm your podcast host from AMA. And today we have a great chat with Jeremy Ray from Baker Hughes. Jeremy is the Senior Account Manager, Oilfield Equipment and Diversity Inclusion Leader in Australia at the energy technology company Baker Hughes. On this edition, we dive deep on diversity, equity and inclusion and why it's so important to Jeremy. We talk about how Baker Hughes is leading the way through its innovative and successful programs and initiatives in this space. I hope you get a lot out of it and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Jeremy.
Thank you for having me.
I'd love for you to get us started by giving us some background and perhaps an overview of Baker Hughes. Then, of course, I'd love to then follow that on with some information about you for our listeners.
So Baker Hughes is an energy technology company, which is headquartered between London and Houston and has operations in over 180 countries around the world. We provide equipment, services, and integrated solutions across many industries in Australia. That includes the upstream and downstream oil and gas markets, renewables, mining, and many other industrial sectors through our various sensing technologies. Our purpose is clear. We want to make energy safer, cleaner, and more efficient for the people on the planet. Within Australia, we employ about 600 people, with the majority being between either Perth or Brisbane, greater metropolitan areas.
Fantastic. And how do you fit into Baker Hughes? What's been your background and how long have you worked there?
So as many people these days, I wear multiple hats. Maybe I'll start with where I started. Got a background in mechanical engineering from the US and moved to Australia in 2005. I started my early career working on both onshore and offshore oil rigs around Australia, the Middle East, Africa, the Gulf of Mexico, and other locations. After doing that for about 7 years, I progressed into project engineering, project management, and then into account management, which is where I'm mostly today. I said I wear multiple hats, so I lead multiple key accounts with customers in Australia to work with them toward the various life cycles of the project from cradle to grave. So looking at everything from what technology needs to be developed to how it's implemented and decommissioned. Beyond that, I'm very involved in supporting our diversity, equity, and inclusion streams within the company. And I lead our network of employee resource groups within Australia. And I also lead our Pride at Work employee resource group across Asia Pacific.
Well, as you said, many hats, but I also need to comment on how amazing that your career has taken you around the world. And I'm sure that that has given you absolutely amazing perspectives that feed into the work you do in diversity, equity and inclusion. And I'd love to get some background as to why this is an area that you do work in, I imagine, both formally, but also informally in your career and in your life.
So it's been a long journey for me. If you had told me 10 years ago about how open and involved I was in all of these different programs for, we'll call it DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, I wouldn't have believed you. I wasn't as comfortable being myself. And it's been a lot of steps along the way to get there. So I might start by saying that I identify as a cisgender gay man. I came out late compared to many of the people these days, and it happened while I was working in Karratha. When I moved from the US to Australia, I spent my first 3 years living there, and that's where I decided to come out, which is probably not the easiest or most ideal places. And I did find some challenges, but I also found a lot of support from my coworkers and my family abroad. And I think as I've moved on, I've realized how important it is to support people that are on their different journeys. And it is a journey for everybody. And while I may have started with trying to be more involved in supporting our LGBTI community and colleagues and our Pride group, I have really evolved to want to support all of the different employees. And I've found how important it is that everybody has the opportunity to feel welcome, safe, and validated in their working environment.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey and the insights and really what you've described as an evolution in terms of how you view this such important cultural area, because it's how everybody feels about themselves, right? No matter where you sit or how you see yourself, no matter what culture you're from, everybody wants to feel safe and included. So thank you so much for sharing that, Jeremy. And that might lead us to take a bit of a change in tact and talk about DEI from a Baker Hughes perspective, because obviously you're very passionate about it and very involved in it with the work you do leading those areas in the organization. Can you explain to me the way that Baker Hughes approaches DEI and if that approach has some type of overarching goal or vision?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So as a company, our strategy and purpose are enabled by our culture. And that is built on our set of values that we work by. And our Baker Hughes values are grow, collaborate, lead, and care. Mm. And those really have been ingrained in us as we have evolved as a company over the last several years, and how we really approach everything internally and externally. We are part of a change to a different energy future. And we believe that that future belongs to all of us. Mm-hmm. And in order to really leverage the skills that we need to get there, everybody has to be able to feel comfortable coming and working here and speaking up. We feel that being able to share different ideas can fuel different innovation. It makes us stronger as a company. And we really want to be able to celebrate the diversity of everybody. At a global level, we have become a signatory of the UN Global Compact, which is the world's largest sustainability organization. And we've also aligned our corporate responsibility dashboard to the UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Right.
And that covers all of our different work and how we focus on people, planet, and principles. And within our DEI journey, there's a couple of the UN Sustainable Development Goals which are important there, including gender equality, reduced inequalities, and partnerships to develop the goals. So within the company, we also have a number of employee resource groups at a enterprise or global level. And we feel that these employee resource groups have a powerful influence on being able to build awareness, change, and community. And they're a way to give a voice to groups that might not feel powerful enough to bring their voice to the table or comfortable enough to do that.
Mm.
And they take an active role in our company priorities, how we work together, and how we support the communities that we live in as well, because we see that by developing this framework of DEI within the organization, it's not only going to support what we're doing at work, but it's going to support what we're doing outside of work, how we interact with our families and our communities.
I love that last comment, and I've often heard stories from the industry about things that people have been educated and empowered by at work and how that's informed and really assisted their life outside of it. So you've really connected some fantastic dots there for us. And I guess I'd like to drill down into something you touched on when you mentioned your background. You know, you said that if I'd spoken about this some years ago, it would have been a very different scenario. Can you talk to me about what you think the big difference have been, maybe from a energy resources perspective or maybe just a broader corporate industry perspective in the DEI space in the last 15 years? What kind of change have you seen occurred? And do you think that that change is accelerating, or where do you think we're going with that, with the change?
It's a very good question. And it is something that has evolved over the years. And in general, looking at sort of now compared to 15 years ago, I do see it as a more inclusive industry overall. there's some areas where I think we still need to focus and some areas which are lacking, but overall, I think it is more inclusive. One of the big areas which I think has improved is the openness in which we can talk about some of these DEI principles, the way that we can now talk about mental health, the way that that's been brought to the forefront. 15 years ago, everybody was talking about safety, and it was primarily our physical safety. I think we're now really trying to understand what is our psychological safety and making sure that we are all comfortable at work, that trying to limit our stress. But aside from the general changes, there have been, in the last 15 years, a number of market changes which have impacted our progress. The biggest one was the downturn in 2020 following the COVID pandemic, which we're still dealing with and recovering from. All of these market changes have had impact, but I think one of the biggest changes has been around the workforce age profiles.
Right.
Over the years, we've seen a lot of our senior personnel that have either left or have retired. And something that we're dealing with as an industry is knowledge drain. Now, there are challenges with that, but some may see a bright side to this as well, as we're able to push ahead with new ways of working and changing the industry, which may have been a concept that was challenging to the makeup of the industry as before. I think that we've really need to continue evolving to, one, deal with the knowledge drain, but also to really to attract and retain the talent which we need to be able to progress to the future that we want to be in.
Could not agree more. And I particularly love your comments about moving from physical safety culture to more psychological safety culture. And I really would be interested to know, in that answer, you said that there has been, you know, big strides in terms of inclusion, but there's some areas still lacking. Have you got anything that sticks out to you in your memory as some areas that you think, wow, you know, we've come a long way? Any success stories?
There have certainly been a lot of successes that we've seen. One of them, to me, has been the acceptance and growth of our Pride at Work employee resource group and the way in which we are able to actively talk about things which might have been taboo or used in a slur 15 years ago. That has been something that personally has been very important for me, seeing that we're able to talk about these things in the way that when we started, I was even able to say I identify as a cisgender gay male. 15 years ago, I don't think people would have known what that means, and some people may not, but it's still the journey we're on. But the fact that we can do that, the other things that I think have really enabled us have been some of the things that have come out of 2020 and the way that we've had to move to a more virtual world and moving our teams online. There have been challenges with that as well, and there certainly can be for a lot of online time. We all have lots of video meetings these days, but it's enabled us to really connect with our colleagues, whereas previously we might have, if we had a call with our teams around the world and within Baker Hughes, because we've got so many people spread out across the world. I generally start my day with catching up on what's happened in the US time zone, get caught up, and then at the end of my day, I start preparing to deal with Europe. And previously, we might have just been on a call, and there wouldn't have been much to discuss before you get into the meat of the conversation. But now everybody has a video on, you're getting to know people more personally. I think that's been really good for us to do. And within Australia, we've had some big successes out of last year, which came from wanting to come together in dealing with the early stages of lockdown. We brought together a number of different virtual workouts that we did to try to keep people healthy. We brought together a number of different mental health support programs to support our employees. And we also, one that stands out is we brought something in called the School Holiday Heroes Program, where we brought together a bunch of volunteers to make small programs to help the parents that were working while their kids were on school holidays and dealing with that, and put together programs for different age groups of kids, and it was really a help to the parents. So that was a success. I think some of the challenges that we've faced is around engagement fatigue. And with everybody working from home or working more or having to take more on, it can be a challenge sometimes in trying to get some of these messages out. And we've had to really adjust how we manage those messages that we get out. We have also had some challenges in finding ways to engage with our teams that are spread out either across our geography, which is Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, and within my role of supporting the Pride at Work group across Asia Pacific. And when you're dealing with multiple time zones and in different cultures as well, that can be some challenges. Specifically to the Pride at Work employee resource group, one of the things that we're constantly trying to be aware of is being culturally sensitive. We want to support any of our employees to grow and to be their true selves at work. But we also know that there's certain countries within our Asia Pacific region where we operate where being openly gay or any of the other letters in the LGBTIQA plus acronym might be illegal or punishable by death. So we have to really ensure that we are finding culturally appropriate ways of working.
That's so fascinating, because a lot of organizations, as you said, are far more inclusive than they've ever been, yet there's still obviously areas that we need to really do a lot of work in figuring out how to do these things appropriately. And you touched on that in an earlier answer about the industry is much more inclusive, but it's still lacking in some areas. What are the areas that you think, you know, working in the industries and sectors that you do, are some of the big things that communities and companies need to pay more attention and do more work in?
I think two stand out. One is around gender diversity. It's been a focus for a while. I think as a industry within, shall we say, energy and resources, we're still behind. There's some companies that are blazing ahead of others, and we've seen there's different ways of going about that. And I feel that in order to really achieve gender diversity and or gender parity within our workforce, which is something we should strive for, is that we're going to need a different way of doing it. We really need to start with understanding what we are as a organization. Is this somewhere or an industry? Is this somewhere that people want to work? Do we have the culture? Do we have the safety? Do we have everything else that's going to attract and retain these employees? So that is one area, gender diversity. The other one, which I think we can do more and is a, shall we say, a hot topic these days, is around neurodiversity. And there's a large untapped group of talent and potential employees that are out there that want to get into work and can actually do some very amazing things with being able to draw connections to data, to be able to analyze things. And in the past, they may not have felt comfortable or welcome, or may not have tried to recruit people within the neurodiverse area, but they can offer some game-changing things for our industry.
Thanks for sharing those two areas. I want to touch on gender diversity just briefly. As you mentioned, a massive hurdle for our industry. About 17% across all resources and energy in Australia bobbles around that percentage every year when the results come out. Yet there is such motivation and focus on it, from my perspective, from so many different companies. And when we're recording this, it hasn't been long since the government made its response to the Human Rights Commission sex discrimination report, Respect at Work. And you just touched on, you know, making this industry and these workplaces attractive for all people. Do you see in the work that you do across the resource groups and really your amazing experience in the industry, what do you think is holding back Australia in terms of its ability to transform such an important industry to the country for gender diversity?
I think there's a couple of things. One, I agree that we do need to make sure that the industry is safer. And Baker Hughes is a corporate member of the Diversity Council of Australia. And we have recently signed up to their I Stand for Respect campaign, which is something that we really wanted to ensure that people feel comfortable and safe at work. In order to make some big changes, I think one of the things we need to do is focus on our culture. And as I mentioned earlier, make this a place where people want to work. There's a number of different industry groups that are working on outreach programs to schools and focusing on future talent and everything back from sort of the K through six back into high schools. And within Baker Hughes, we have a number of different programs that we run. We do a coding for kids program where we go into schools and or into charities and we teach basic coding skills. We work with a number of high schools around the Perth metro area to develop and to showcase the skills and the technology that we have coming as well. And we participate in other groups that have more formal industry programs to bring school kids up. Now, focusing on the gender there, it's something we need to do. And there was a conversation I had with someone recently where they were in a similar interview, they were asking someone, why did you become a female engineer in the oil and gas industry? And their response really got to me. They said, I didn't want to be a female engineer. I just wanted to be an engineer and I happened to work here. And I think that's the differentiation. But I think we have to stop and understand, are we talking about things in the right way? Are we framing this the right way? And it's not until we have those discussions and it's where we're focused on that I think we'll actually understand how we need to proceed.
Great perspective, and got to give a plug to the program that AMA runs. You mentioned some of the organizations doing work in this area, and AMA certainly does. We have the Bright Future STEM program, which is the national primary school program focusing on 9 to 12 year old boys and girls, but we put a predominant 80% female role models to introduce them to the children because, as you say, we need to start by changing people's understanding of the industry and by giving them role models. And we certainly don't introduce them as a female engineer or a female environmental scientist. And the kids don't look at it that way at all. So I really love your point about how we're framing some of these challenges that we have. I'd like to change tack now, and I'd like to talk to you about intersectionality. And for those that are new to that topic, the description I'd give it is how one's social and political identity and background combine to create different modes of both things like discrimination, but also, on the other hand, privilege. And is intersectionality something that you think about, you work on at Baker Hughes? And if so, how do you approach it?
It's a great subject, and it's one that is very front of mind for a lot of people at the moment, and something that will probably be new to a lot of people as well. Earlier this year at the AOG Energy Conference, they have a D&I breakfast forum, and the keynote speaker at that event was speaking around intersectionality. And since then, we've seen a number of other events pop up around it. So the topic of intersectionality is something that is front of mind to many people at the moment. And within Baker Hughes, it's something that I think we have evolved to really incorporate into how we manage things. And we have a number of different employee resource groups across the company, which we can get into later, but we're all aligned in our values and we regularly collaborate and we stand in solidarity together. We realize that globally, we encompass a very diverse group of employees. For example, the majority of our employees in Australia weren't even born here. So our multicultural aptitude and awareness is really ingrained in who we are. But over the past couple of years, I think it is something that we've seen that we don't want to talk about diversity, equity, inclusion in silos. While it can be important for us to have these different employee resource groups to show focus and to develop ideas, we do really need to have a common understanding across ourselves and to really show a united front in a lot of different ways. So it is something that we see on a global level and something that we really approach here in Australia as well.
And it sounds like you do that through collaborations. I'll follow up your answer there by asking about what are the different resource groups and how do you engage and collaborate? And are there some standout programs and initiatives that you can tell us about that might inspire other people listening to think about how they could do it at their company?
Yeah, happy to do so. So within Australia, we have 7 employee resource groups. They are Enabled, Living Well, Multicultural, Pride at Work, Veterans, Volunteers, and the Women's Network. And globally, there are several more, which we don't have active hubs or chapters here in Australia. And the additional ones are African American Forum, our Asia Pacific American Forum, and Latinx. And again, because we're such a large company, we have the different focus areas in different parts of the world. And I think everybody is okay with that. But just because I'm here in Australia doesn't mean that I can't be a member of these different employee resource groups. And I have signed up to support these other ERGs, even though they're not here, because we're aligned in our goals. And one example of how we have come together and talking about collaboration is an event that we did in December last year. So the 1st of December is World AIDS Day, and it's something that we've celebrated for a number of years within the organization and globally. Last year, we brought 3 of our different ERGs together to showcase how important things were and how this event and how World AIDS Day went across the different ERGs. And what we did is we held an event where we talked about the interrelationship between HIV, AIDS, disability, and mental health. And we brought together a number of internal and external guest speakers to share their stories, to break down stereotypes, like HIV and AIDS is something that only affects the gay community, which it's not, and to also build empathy and awareness. And by bringing these groups together and cross-promoting it, one, we were able to bring it to a bigger audience, but we were also able to bring more diverse ideas in and be able to show the different facets of why something is important.
That is such a fantastic way to describe it, because I hear a lot about organizations having different groups to support all the different areas of our cultures and our, you know, social and political backgrounds and persuasions. But how you've just talked about how they interact through what seems like a simple celebration of one particular day paints a really great picture of how much overlap and collaboration would be occurring at Baker Hughes. You've talked about how the values are really aligned. How do you go about aligning 7 and then in other countries more of these resource groups? How do you go about aligning values? Obviously, alignment of initiatives and focus areas is something that would be quite different. But values, is that aligning Baker Hughes values or the values amongst the resource groups?
It's a bit of both, actually.
Okay.
And it does take work to align how our groups come together. And we've got, shall we say, sort of 3 different levels. We've got our global employee resource group, and there's a DEI council that brings together the executive sponsors for each of the employee resource groups along with our senior leadership team. And they talk about what's important for us, either this year, either short term, long term, how we want to come together. And we have a list of sort of objectives that we want to meet within the year. And then each region has its own DEI council as well. So as the leader for our Pride at Work employee resource group across Asia Pacific, I sit on that one and I get to understand what are some of the challenges that we're facing in the region. And then we also have a local council as well, which I lead, and we meet on a monthly basis, and we have representatives from each of the employee resource groups. And to note, we all have day jobs, and the involvement and the time that we bring to leading these ERGs is really a passion. And it's people coming together and taking on these roles, not because it's something that their manager told them that they needed to do. It's something that they're passionate about. So I'm personally passionate about private work because of my connection and my community, but there's other people that have come together and may want to be involved because of something that affects their family or their community. And so everybody's passionate. We meet on a monthly basis and we discuss what events are coming up. We met at the start of the year and we said, okay, we've mapped out, these are the key events that we see happening throughout the year. These are the days of significance. And where do we want to focus? Because having seven different groups, you can imagine we had a calendar which had probably 100 different days.
Chock-a-block. Yes.
It was. And we just went, that's too many. So we said each ERG, pick one event a quarter that you want to recognize, but also really bringing different employee resource groups together. So one good example is within an initiative called Steptember, which you may have heard about. It's a charity that raises funds to support the cerebral palsy community and to fuel research. And that was initially led by our Living Well employee resource group, which focused on physical and mental health. But our Enabled group, which wants to support people who may be living with a disability, has come together as well. And so we now have multiple groups coming together and trying to promote and push out one initiative. And we found so much success with it that we're now pushing it on to our global level. And we've got our team in the US taking part in September as well. And so that's one of the things. We have this flow of ideas both up and down between our local, regional, and global levels across the different employee resource groups. And for us, we don't feel that an idea or initiative is something that only belongs to one. Multiple groups can come on and can help each other. And in general, the DEI practices, they're not intellectual property. Mm-hmm. What helps one group or one part of the industry can help another. And we actively share these events with other peers in our industry as well and try to come together.
That sounds so fantastic. And I'm glad you touched on earlier that it's not always easy to do this, particularly as you mentioned that it's people's passion, but it sounds like a culture at Baker Hughes that really supports people's passions and funnels them into, you know, really meaningful ways. I just want to change tack for a second before I wrap up today, because I understand that Baker Hughes has also been through a broader transformation process. You and I have talked about lots of different transformation processes with the topics that we've traversed today, but I understand that your organization has been through a specific transformation process. And I want to ask you that question, but with a specific focus on the people and culture and how that's enabled the transformation process that your company's been through.
Thanks for that question. And yes, Baker Hughes has been through a transformation over the past couple of years. And it started in 2017 with two companies coming together. What was GE Oil and Gas and what was Baker Hughes came together and formed a new, stronger company. Now, we had both organizations having a very long culture and journey as organizations. Both were over 100 years old and had very ingrained cultures. And when we brought these two companies together, the leadership had the foresight to say, we really want to understand our culture and where we're at. So we embarked on a journey to measure and understand where the culture is. We did several surveys at a global and regional level to understand where we needed to focus on, where we were at compared to our peers in our industry and other industries as well. And that led us to a number of both short-term and long-term goals and changes that we needed to make in terms of how we communicated, how we were set up, how we supported our employees. So it took several years, and it was driven by a desire by the leadership to create a new team that was stronger and more cohesive than we had been previously.
Mm-hmm.
And the outcome, I think, has been good. We have really grown a culture that is open to discussing ideas, to sharing thoughts. We have a monthly global conversation on different topics whether it's let's talk culture, let's talk community, let's talk how we can live our values, and very open to hearing new ideas and adapting to learning what we need to do and not being afraid to change that as well.
And in reference to your culture and really bringing it back to what you've been talking about in terms of your organizational transformation and what we've been talking about, which is really social and cultural change, what advice would you have for companies and perhaps leaders like yourself who might not be as far along their cultural or DEI journey? And in that, can you highlight why you think it's been beneficial for you and your organization?
Sure. To someone that is looking to get started, I would say take the time, don't rush, and do some research, and feel free to contact me. I think that it's something that will take time. I know when we were getting ready to launch some of our employee resource groups here in Australia, we actively went out and we found peers who may have launched a similar employee resource group or a different program, and we spoke to them and said, okay, well, what worked? What didn't work? What have you learned? And found, okay, well, depending upon where you're at, I mean, one is to know your employees, one is to know your peers, and also to know your shareholders as well and your communities that you work in. So don't rush to do that. Ask for help. Don't be afraid, because there's so many good ideas that are out there and there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. Now, some of the outcomes that we've had is really, and you touched on it earlier, the social events that have happened. And I've been very happy and heartened to see the way that the Baker Hughes communities have come together in the wake of some of these major events. And an example of that is the Black Lives Matter movement last year, and the way that our African American Forum Employee Resource Group and our multicultural group have come together and have led that and advocated within our organization. There have been challenges with anti-Asian sentiment around the world in recent times. That's been something that has been brought up by our Asia Pacific American Forum and has given our leaders a way to understand, okay, well, how can we talk about this? Well, you've got a whole group of people that are passionate about it, and finding ways to support them. And then also volunteering. We have done a lot of volunteering around the world, everything from doing fundraisers to support the bushfires that have happened here in Australia, coming from the support around COVID last year in repurposing a lot of our 3D printers to support with PPE, and most recently with corporate donations and also individual fundraising for what's happening in India with the COVID challenges at the moment as well. So again, it's finding ways to allow these ERGs and the communities they represent to have a voice and help guide our leadership on what they might want to do and how to respond.
I can hear from most of the things we've talked about today, such pride, and excuse alliteration, I can hear the pride that you have in how Baker Hughes is approaching all of these really sometimes tricky social and cultural issues and how the organization is transforming. Jeremy, your offer to be contacted by people that are listening who are looking to start their journey or need some support in it is so generous. And I really just can't thank you enough for sharing what is really a passion of yours and sounds like a real passion for Baker Hughes. So thank you for your story and thank you for telling us how Baker Hughes goes about undertaking these things, and just really appreciate your time joining us on Resource People Podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to chat with someone about these programs. As you probably heard, it's a passion of mine, but I think it's something that we all need to work together on, and it's something that we should share freely as well. So again, thank you for having me today.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us for this conversation on Resource People Podcast with Jeremy and hearing more about Jeremy's journey and the transformation of Baker Hughes as it focuses on people and culture across the globe. In particular, it was so fascinating to hear about the company's employee work groups, how they work together globally to bring about positive change across so many parts of their business. Thanks for listening to Resource People Podcast.
AMA acknowledges and pays respects to the traditional custodians of the land from which the Resource People podcast was recorded from today, both the Turrbal and Yugara people. AMA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which you are living, learning, and listening to this podcast from today. We pay our respects to elders both past, present, and emerging.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.